So, do you think I should get a vasectomy? Britt said while passing me in the hallway one bright summer afternoon. Daisy had just turned 1 year old, and our son was 4. We had the perfectly proportioned family for our conventional white picket fence existence, and it was time to start thinking of our reproductive future. Or lack of it. All our friends were going the snip-snip route, so naturally we considered it for ourselves. The copycat mentality is alive and well way past middle school, and because women are grossly and inappropriately informed on the details of all our besties' reproductive health and choices, a vasectomy was next on our to-do list. I remember stopping a moment in the sunshine that was pouring through the hall window, flagstone patio and olive trees in my peripheral vision, laundry basket balanced on my hip. Casually, I responded, nah, I mean, what if one of our kids dies? I wouldn't want to be a one-kid family. He looked at me as if we were deciding whether to get tacos or burritos for lunch, shrugged, and said, okay. Okay, as if we had just decided what color to paint the bathroom. Okay, as if we were simply considering putting bunk beds in our son's bedroom. Fast forward 7 years, and Daisy was, in fact, dying. And I was, in fact, about to be the mother of a one-kid family. Daisy was losing her fight with cancer, and we were out of treatment options, having exhausted all the approved regimens American Pediatric Oncology offered. After getting her third diagnosis, the one that came with the dreaded, "We've done all we can do," death sentence, our attention, time, and efforts were caught in a deluge. The mission to find an alternative cure took over. We sent out mass pleas for help on social media and received an avalanche of replies, everything from eat copious amounts of this certain nut and drink mushroom tea to have this extra holy person pray for her. We had to weed through the noise and the crazy, all while bearing the leaden weight of holding Daisy's life in our hands. It was up to me and her dad to make the critical choice of what we should do, and it felt like a sick game of Russian roulette. After the rigidity of traditional cancer treatment, choosing an alternative and experimental treatment was like standing before some cruel and brazen carnival lady in garish lipstick spinning the wheel. If we picked the right number, we would win it all. But if not, there seemed to be 100 ways to treat Daisy and 100 ways to die. All we had to do was clearly hear from the Lord about which choice was the winning number, then we'd know which direction to take our family. Our future. No pressure. My world was a whirlwind of chaos, a frantic effort to hear the voice of God, to do right by my family. After much agonizing, much prayer, and with the generous financial help of many, we decided on a clinic in Israel, where a brilliant doctor was developing innovative ways to treat cancer. Even after we made the decision, though, my brain swarmed with medical conversations, outreach on social media, wacky suggestions, visas, correspondence with the Israeli clinic, treatment trials, and all the medical preparations to get us there. It felt like the four of us were about to jump off a bridge, holding hands and hoping we wouldn't get separated. When the time finally came and all our emergency visas were granted, we packed our sandals and to the Holy Land we went. I was about to learn some of the most valuable lessons of my life, things I couldn't have imagined ever needing to learn. There are some lessons that, when they transpire, it's like finally noticing your roots are badly outgrown, or the jeans you've been wearing twice a week make your butt look lumpy. How have I been walking around like this? Why did I think it was completely okay? Funny how...